getting something new. As we enter the period of the 3 weeks, which will begin this Tuesday, Be'ezrat Hashem, it says, Kol avot fera yisiguha ben ha-meitzarim, all those who pursued her caught her during the times of besiegement. So on a simple level, this means that all of those who pursued the people, the leadership of the Jewish people, caught them, trapped them, dispossessed them during this period. On a deeper level, the Zohar says, Kol avot fera, all of those who pursued her, her being the Shechina, yisiguha ben ha-meitzarim, will catch her during this time of besiegement. Meaning the more we're willing to be real and see our enormous vulnerability and how awful our situation is, spiritually and physically, the more at last we'll turn to Hashem. So we're going to be doing Prakim in Netzach Yisrael. Netzach Yisrael is the Maharal's Hebrew on Golos and Geula. Okay, each one of the Prakim will shed new light about the source of exile and the possibility of redemption. With this in mind, we're going to be starting the third perek. Okay, the third perek is complex, like all of them are. Excuse me, the fifth perek. I had to make several prakim. I hope that we'll get somewhere. Okay, so it begins by telling us over the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, which I'm sure you know, but we'll read it anyway. Okay, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mai Dechtiv, Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid, what does it mean in Mishlei when it says, happy is the man who is always afraid? Well, a person who hardens his heart against fear, that means, will fall in evil. Okay, so what that means is that the enemy of fear, of evil, is hardening your heart. We have three things that we should be afraid of, as we'll see. One is Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, through whom Yerushalayim was destroyed. A male and female rooster led to the destruction of Tor Malka. And from a wagon wheel, Beitar was destroyed. So we begin with the first one, Kamtzu Varkamtza. Okay, what's this about? There was a man whose friend was Kamtza. Do we know who this man is? No. And this is an important part of this, because remember, most of us, when we hear this story, which I'm assuming that you know, think that the bad guy was who? The host. The host is not even mentioned by name. There's a certain man who had a friend called Kamtza, Ubaldevave Bar Kamtza, and a man who was with whom he had quarrels, his name was Bar Kamtza. Avitzudata, he made a feast. Amarle, the Shmaya, he said to the person who listens to him, maybe his shamash, Zil, go, Aisili Kamtza, bring me Kamtza. Azil, Aisile, Bar Kamtza. So he went, and instead he got Bar Kamtza. Asa Eshkiche Dahave Yasiv. And so it was when he saw that he was sitting. Amarle, he said to him, he said, You're the man with whom I have a quarrel. What are you doing here? Kum, fuk, get up, go. Amarle, he says to him, so this is Bar Kamtza replying to the host. Hawil ve'atai shavikin, since I've already come, let me go. Vahayahavi nalach deme mada achilana ushitana. And I'll give to you the money for what I eat and what I drink. Amarle, lo, he said to him, no. Amarle, yavina lach de me palga de sudasech. I'll give you money for half of your su'uda. Amarle, lo, he said, no. Yavina lach de me kule sudasech. I'll give you money for your whole su'uda. Amarle, lo, he said to him, nakitet vafike. So he got up and he went. Amar, he said, this is who's saying, the man who left is saying, Bar Kamtza. Hawil v'havi yatvei rabbanan v'lo machu bei. Since the rabbanim were sitting there and they didn't protest, shema minei karnaicha lohu. It seems to me that they were okay with this, that they were content with this. Izal ilchu bahu kurtza bimalka. So the next thing that he does, this tzaddik, okay, he went to to do malshinus, to slander the Jews in the house of the king. Azal, he went, Amalei l'keser, he said to the king, Mardubacha Yehudai, the Jews have rebelled against him. Amalei, miyemar, the king says, who said? Amalei, Shadalahi korbana, send them a sacrifice. Chazit imakriven le, and see if they'll sacrifice it. Azil, he went, Shadabia de egla tilata. So he sent with him an egel mashulash, which is, you remember this with Avraham? In the first brain of Atarim, it could either be three of them, or it could mean one that's particularly good. In this context, it means one that's particularly good. Badadakiati shadabe mume beniv svatayim. So at that point, and what he did was to make him an imperfection in his lip. So the halacha is if an animal has a split lip in the upper lip, then it can't be used as a korban. And there were those who say that no, it wasn't the lip, it was the eye. But in any case, it was a mum. But to them, meaning to the Romans, it isn't considered a mum. So after the korban was examined, the rabbanim who were there said that we have to sacrifice it anyway, even though it has either this split lip or the injury of the eye, because of maintaining peaceful relationships with the government. Amalu Rabbi Zacharya Bav Avklus, but Rabbi Zacharya Bav Avklus said, Yamu Bale Mumen Kaviven Legabe Mizbeach. Then people will say that it's allowed. They'll just know what you did. They won't know your motivation. They'll say that it's permitted to offer invalid sacrifices that have imperfections on the Mizbeach. Savor Malakatle, Deloy Lizal Vilema, okay? So the next idea was to kill him, meaning to kill the Shaliach and kill the animal, and nobody will know the whole story. Amalhu Rabbi Zacharya. Okay, Rabbi Zacharya again says, Yomar Matil Mum Bekachim Yehareg, that if a person makes an imperfection in an animal that was set aside for sacrifice, he should be killed. Amar Rabbi Yochanan said, An v'tanuto shav Rabbi Zacharya ben Avuklus hachriva et beitenu v'saf et hechaleinu v'iglatenu mi'artzenu. So he says, Rabbi Yochanan says, that Rabbi Zacharya's anava, the reason why he was saying these objections, was not because he was pedantic or difficult, but because he was humble. Who am I to change the rules of the game? So he was wrong in this sense. So Rabbi Zacharya says that that in this case, his anava was misplaced, and that's what destroyed our home, burnt our heichal, and caused us to be rebelled from our land. Shala al yevehu nivan kesar, kiyasasha degira lemizrach. Okay, so after this happened, okay, you have the next adventure. Okay, Niran Kesar was then sent to Yerushalayim. Niran Kesar was a general who was sent by the king in order to put down the supposed rebellion against the Jews. Okay, now when he got there, he sent an arrow to the east. Ata nafal b'Yerushalayim. It went and fell in Yerushalayim. Lamar avaso nafal b'Yerushalayim. West, it fell in Yerushalayim. Lar baruchas ha-shamayim. Ata nafal b'Yerushalayim. No matter where he shot, even to the heavens, it fell towards Yerushalayim. Amale liyanuka, and so he said to a child, since he knows children are a repository of wisdom that's supernatural, Psokli psukecha, tell me your pasuk. Amale, v'natati et nikmati be'edom, biad ami Yisrael. He quotes Yecheskel, and he says, Hashem will say, I'll put my vengeance in Edom, in the hands of my people Israel, meaning he'll use Edom to be, Hashem will use Edom to be his hand in taking vengeance of the Jews and then take revenge against Edom. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Bailach Viv Beise. Okay, Hashem wants to destroy his house. Ubay Lachupura Yadeh Bahu Gavra. Arak Azava Agayer. And he wants to do it through me, so I'll go. And he went and he converted. V'nafek Mine Rabbi Meir Adkan. And the result was that Niran Kesar was the ancestor of Rabbi Meir. And Adkan, that's the Gemara. So we've just read the Gemara. I'm sure that the story was familiar to you in any case. Now we'll begin to understand it. V'tosvas kashe, perek havoa, amar chazi lahu gavet dehu mefached, kamechata'at, kedichtiv, pachadu b'tzion chatayim. So he's talking about the beginning of the Gemara. We get so lost in the story if we forget the beginning. What was the beginning? The beginning of the Gemara was Ashveyat Mefachet Tamid, that the story should inspire you to what? To have continual fear. Continual fear of what? That's very unclear to us right now. So he's going to bring us to another Gemara. I mean, what should we be afraid of? We should be afraid of sending a shliach and his finding the wrong person. We should be afraid of the wrong guest coming to the Suda. What should we be afraid of? So the Gemara says that when it says Asriyat and Mefache Tamid, what pachat should a person have? Fear of sin. As it says, fear is attached to sin. As it says, pachat ubetzin chatayim. Prich mikra tahach umukile to divrei Torah kativ shedoeg. Others will say that this is speaking not about sin in general, but specifically about guarding what one has learned. A person has to review what they've learned in order to see that they don't forget. So the Tosfos, who's attaching this to the story that we just read about, will say that the pacha that we have goes beyond that. Okay, that what's going on in the story is that this person should have been afraid and not trusted on his shlemus and on his goodness to take on himself the responsibility of humiliating someone. He should have had enough awareness that it's not his place to ignore what he knows about the severity of embarrassing someone. So therefore, this is what caused the destruction, etc., etc. Okay, so there must have been something wrong, because if it was just Rav Zacharia's Anava, he isn't the only one who suffered. And since we have the rule, there's no suffering without sin, which is something I'll have to speak to you about in a moment. Therefore, there must have been an existent sin, and the sin that we see is that they didn't do either of the two things that we've just discussed, being afraid of sin, or aware of what the Torah teaches them, because had those two components not been lacking, they wouldn't have embarrassed Bar Kamtza. When a person sins, they should be afraid for the sin that will come upon them.
Kach yesh lo lefached mechet ador, kasher yesh shehem chotim, az yidag shelo yevo poralios, vein lasot maisa sheefshar sheyevo mimenu tzara.
So in the same way that a person has to be careful about what they learn, they also have to be worried about the sin of their generation, the generation in which they live, in order that they realize that if the generation is sinful, they may suffer the punishments together with the generations. So here's what we have to think about before we go further. In general, fear has a very bad reputation. We don't like fear. We like, you know, feeling good. So there should be fear. So we have now several things to fear. Why should there be fear, though? So the underlying reality is, again, as we said earlier, Hashem tzilcha al yad yiminecha. No matter what you do, you'll bring down a result. So because of this, if you don't know, or if you aren't careful, you have to live with the results, and also the results of the people of your generation who don't know and aren't careful. So this is called Yiras HaOnesh. In a general sense, Yiras HaOnesh is the lowest level of Yira. What is it good for? So if you're not careful with Yiras HaOnesh, it could easily lead you to hating Hashem. How so? A person will say, if I have to worry that Hashem will punish me when I do wrong things, why, that proves to me Hashem is punitive. He's out to get me. He wants to see me suffer. And that's why when I do A, B, C, or D, and there's nobody who does no sin, then I'm doomed. What should Yiras HaOnesh look like? It should look like the person looks when they look in the mirror critically, you know. They want to see that they get all of the imperfections away in order that the beautiful side of themselves come forth. So what that means concretely is when a person suffers, certainly there's no such thing as punishment without sin. So the suffering instructs them as to what their tikkun is. So if there's sin, then the punishment is good for them. I'll give you an extreme illustration. Let's say I was just reading somebody's who actually lived through this. Okay, a couple has a terrible relationship, which leads to all sorts of verbal violence and abuse, and withholding money, this and that. So the husband is so verbally abusive, the shouting and the humiliations, that the wife succeeded in getting a court order, getting him out of the house. Now, as women, who do we identify with in this story? The wife. She shouldn't have to suffer abuse. It's good that she's free of him. But I read this story from the man's angle. How did he write his story? So he said, of course, the day that he got the tzav, that's what's called in Israel, the tzav hachaka, it was the worst day of his life. It's his home. He owns half of this apartment. The furniture was bought with his money. So he realized, he came to grips, of course, so they're obviously not getting along. Obviously, he's gone past where he could go. You can't live with him. It would be immoral and ridiculous to throw her out, especially since they have children. So he recognized that this is his reality. His deeds have brought him to a place where he's been thrown out of the house. Step one, recognize reality. He's out of the house. Step two, as a person who's religious, and in this case has a good Rebbe, he had to recognize that it's good for him that he's been thrown out of the house, because now he's going to have to deal with things. And with his Rebbe's guidance, he found ways of dealing with his uncontrolled anger, new methods of communication. He was instructed immediately, since no matter what, he has to fix what's wrong with him, to take her out of the picture, to not plot revenge against her, how he'll get back into the house, or how, since he has more money than she can, he could overturn the court decree. No. Why is she that unhappy? Clearly, she's unhappy. Why is she unhappy? If she wants you out of the house, she's not happy with you. She married you thinking that you're going to be the light of her life. What went wrong? Why aren't you making her happy? This is what his Rebbe made him face. And he told him to take his time about getting back into the house. You have a lot of fixing to do. So in the course of a serious amount of time, he worked through these issues. And the way he did this was not with professional help, it was with his Rebbe and with others, working through his anger issues, working through the communication. He was immediately, send money, give her gifts. When you call the children, tell them, listen to your mother. Don't say a bad word about her, because your role is to be the kind of husband who could make her happy. And you know what? It worked. It worked because he recognized that this was a gift from Hashem. So this is ideally how we should relate to Onesh. Onesh is there to stop us in our tracks and to give us the possibility of tikkun. Now sometimes we don't know, because since our lives don't necessarily begin in this lifetime, we don't know what we broke. But what we do know is that whatever Onesh that we're suffering here and now is the source of our tikkun. So with this in mind, we can go further. Ve'en lakshot, ma'anyen she'esh l'dog min ha'chet, el davar zeh shelo yishkach divrei Torah. You could say, what is there about worrying about sin that carries with it not worry about not forgetting divrei Torah? T'maisi ra'yaminin, what's the proof?
The shopping maise raya, kitam echad l'shnehem. But of course, it doesn't need an external raya because they have one reasons. Kimasha marlahu gavra, chata'at, tamay demilsa shekol mefachet siman shubal chet uval chisaron.
So in the story that the Gemara is about, a man sees another man and says, he's afraid, and says, well, what's your sin? So the reality is that a person that has nothing to fear except sin. So if a person is afraid and he's an aware person, the only thing could be that he sinned, because it's the person's lack that makes them fear. What does that mean? We all worry about things. We worry about personal things. Will I find the right person? Will my marriage be good? What will my children be like? What about this, that this one isn't doing so well in school? You can go on and on until you get to where will I be buried. Will I lose my job? What about Israel's security? There are always things we worry about. It's natural. The source of all worry is lack. You feel that you're vulnerable and lacking. And the source of all lack, those of you who were with us when we learned Netif HaYetzer will remember this, the source of all lack is sin. Ve'enu shalem b'pnei achet, the person is incomplete because of the sin. V'lekach u'mefached, and this is what we're afraid of. Ki ha'davar shu shalem b'pnei shleimuto eino muchan lehefsed. If something is whole because its wholeness is real, it's not lost easily, and what we fear is loss. L'kach en mefached rak mishenu shalem. So a person who's not shalem is the one who will be afraid. V'hu muchan lehefsed, because he could lose something. V'hu mefached. L'fichach kasher ra'a oto adam she'a mefached, and therefore when he saw this man was afraid, amar lo, chata'a ata, you're a sinner. K'achote eno shalem, because he's not whole. V'hu bal chisaron, and he's lacking. Muchan lehefsed, and he could lose something. L'chein mefached, and that's why he's afraid. So that means people's intuitive fear comes from their intuitive recognition of lack. But a person who's whole isn't about to lose something. And therefore, he's not afraid. But the other view, the opposing view concerning Ashrei Adam Mefachet Tamid is with Divrei Torah. Ki atara she'adam Sheba Adam, Efshar liknot oto b'shleimut. Why should we worry about Torah? Because you can't be whole with the Torah. L'fi shedivrei Torah omdim u'muchanim l'shtakech. Because the nature of Torah learning is that we forget. Why? Because we have inner agendas that make us forget what we don't want to know. Bavur shein adam shu bal guf, koneh ha'chachma shisichlit, shu hefach ha'guf. A person is physical, so a person can't acquire a totally non-physical, totally spiritual, intellectual view of life. So whatever inconveniences the body or limits the body is something that we tend to forget. So to concretize this idea, one of the halacha's teachers at Neve is a very good teacher. He'd take the girls through all of the different shitas and then tell them the halacha. And the girls would leave his class not knowing what to do. So he went to Rav Sternbach and said, I'm failing as a teacher. It's not working. And he showed him, I have my outline of the shitas. I take them through the different shitas. And then I tell them the halacha. Why don't they know it at the end? So Rav Sternbach was many, many years of psak behind him. So I'll tell you why. If in one of the shitas that you speak about at the beginning, you use the word leniency, that's all they're going to remember. Why? Because our bodies want leniency. V'davar zeh yadua. K'mo she'amru b'masechet Chagiga, she'divrei Torah kashim liknot v'kalim lishtakeach. As it says, the words of Torah are difficult to acquire and easy to forget. L'kach mikom ninan laha dechtiv ashrei adam mefachet tamid b'divrei Torah. Therefore, we'll establish that ashrei adam mefachet tamid is about divrei Torah, she'en l'adam b'torah kinyan b'shlemus, because it's never fully acquired. A person should be afraid of this. So the second view rejects the first view that presupposes that there's already existent sin, because It says, Ashrei Adam Mefachet Tamid. The man who's always afraid is in a state of spiritual joy. Osher always means spiritual joy. It's never used for physical joy. So that person can't be the Chote. Therefore, it must be, according to the second view, fear of losing the Torah that one learned. Umikol makom, maisavai mahach kva diyeshlo, lefachet kasher eino shalem viyesh kanchet. Sha'az yesh lefachet al hefset, shari kva betorah ayri, semepne shen ha-Torah kinyan b'shlem esadim, v'zer voy lo lefachet. Either way, if you want to say it's the sin, so it's a lack of shlemos. If you want to say it's the Torah and worrying that you didn't forget, again, it's because you don't own the Torah with absolute shlemos.
So at a time when a person isn't shalem, meaning they've lost the Torah that they have, then they sin. That's the natural cause and effect.
So at that time, even the tzaddikim have to worry about the sin of the generations. So the rule. So our bottom line is that every person has to be worried about the sin of their generation, which might be a consequence of having lost Torah. Now with that in mind, we're going to relearn the Bar Kamtza story in some depth. Akamtzu Bar Kamtza v'chulei. Kasha lama haya churban Yerushalayim b'fnei atzmo, v'churban beita b'fnei atzmo. Lama lo necharav hakol kasha nigzar churban al Yerushalayim. So the first question he asks is, the Gemara tells us that there were three separate tragedies. And he asks, why couldn't one just be the domino that knocked down all the others? Why are there three? Va'od kasha, lama zaya shacharav tormalka b'shvil tanagol v'tanagolta, shen safeki ledavar gadol kazek hamo tormalka, shekol inyan shegi lasham lo haya b'mikre. Okay, so, and the other is that the story about the chicken with Tormalka, which was Tormalka's Hare HaMelech, the place of royal splendor, of beautiful vestiges, it was killed because of a chicken, as we'll see as he tells us the story. How could a minor mistake cause such huge destruction? V'chen ashka derisfak shachar beitar lo ha'ezah b'mikre. And also with the wagon wheel of Beitar, this wasn't a coincidence. So it means even though sin caused the destruction, the trigger in each case was something else. In one case, the feast. In the second case, the chickens. In the third case, the wagon wheel. And the trigger is not coincidental. Mikol shekein, Yerushalayim er hakdosha, shecharav al yedei kamtzu uvar kamtza, lo haya zeh b'mikre. And certainly, Yerushalayim, with its vast holiness, it's being destroyed by Kamsa, and Bar Kamsa is not coincidental. Da. Ki divrei chachamim amukim ma'od ma'od. So he says, realize that the words of the sages, when they said these three triggers cause these three results, are very deep. Now I want to explain a little bit of why he's telling us this. His shita, in understanding Agadata, is that every detail of the Agadata was selected by the Chachamim to inform us. Nothing is coincidental. So for Jews to have a presence in Eretz Yisrael, there are three things. Harishon, Fuel Yon al Akol, Shashchina Haita Shara Beinehem, Ve'en Lecha Yishuv Kamo Zeh. So the first thing that characterizes Jewish national life in Eretz Israel and makes it unique is that the Shechina is with us. So this reality, which is the most significant of all of the other things of our being in this land, has concrete effect. It affects us in Gashmias. So he says that Bashkacha Pratis, through which rain falls in Eretz Yisrael, is reflective of the Shechina being with us. I may have told you the story. I always have this fear of telling the same stories, but I'll tell it either I'll tell it or I'll tell it again, depending on what the reality is. Before the first Gulf War, no, there really was only one Gulf War, the first Lebanon War, okay, which was the Gulf War. No, it wasn't. There were three Lebanon. No, before the Gulf War, why should I mix myself up? Okay, there was a housing shortage in Israel, which is a chronic thing, but sometimes it becomes acute. And it was so bad that people were sleeping in the public parks because there were no solutions for them. So those of you who've been to Yerushalayim could understand what I'm saying about how bizarre this was. There were from Jews sleeping in tents in the Ezra's Torah Park because they had nowhere to live. So, you know, the bureaucracy is what it is, and nothing was moving. And people would try to help them out. They would bring them food. They would take their wash for them. It was a very hard situation. It was hard emotionally. It was hard physically. Imagine going to Beis Yaakov with your little blue and blue outfit and going home to a tent. So in any case, at that time there was a drought. And the farmers in the Galil went to Rav Kaduri, who was living then, to ask him to intercede with prayer and to give them a bracha. And he said, no. And they were like, no? I mean, from their perspective, the worst-case scenario is he would give a bracha, but the gezerah from Hashem would be too strong, and the bracha wouldn't help. But for him to refuse to give a bracha was something they didn't anticipate. So they said, why not? And he said, because it's not going to rain no matter what I do. So they said, why not? So he said, as long as people are sleeping outdoors because they have nowhere to live, and they get up every morning and say, I hope it doesn't rain, because all of their possessions will get ruined. It's not going to rain. Their request is stronger and more sincere than mine would be. Right before the war, okay, somehow the government, which is bad as it could be at its worst, they're in the end Jews, and they found housing solutions for everybody, because they couldn't be telling one segment of the population to enter sealed rooms while the other segment is out in the totally exposed. They found solutions. There was a big tefillah at the Kotel, and as soon as they asked for rain, it began to pour in torrents, right after the housing solutions were found. So the reason I told you this story is because this is an Eretz Yisrael story. It wouldn't happen somewhere else so easily. The distance between cause and effect every place else is greater. In Eretz Yisrael, it's direct, it's immediate. And this is what makes the yeshuv of Jews in Eretz Yisrael harder and better. Because, as you know, it's better to have a deep relationship with a friend, a parent, a husband, even though sometimes there'll be bad moments, than to be alone. So that's one aspect of it. Okay, Hasheni. Okay, ya ba'aretz ribui am me'od. Another thing that makes us live in the land is if we have people living here. The land is populated by Jews. Ipso facto, it's a Jewish land. And just agav today, Eretz Yisrael is approaching. It's not there yet. But it's rapidly approaching the time where it'll be Rov Am Yisrael be'Eretz Yisrael. Hashlishi, Shia haya yishuv haaretz bekrachim gdolim v'chazakim. And another thing is that it's viable, that there are large fortified cities, which again, there were. These are the three components of having Jewish settlement in the land. So again, he reviews the first, is that it's not desolate of Hashem's presence. It's not a place of lack, but it's a sense of presence and reality and closeness. And Hashem's eye is upon it. The second is that there are people, and the third is that there are large cities. Okay, so he begins by talking about the Churban of Yerushalayim, Tormalka, and Beitart now. V'chein timtza, sheskir shalosh elu dvarim shamar, v'ritim et ha'aretz mahi, Chazaki, Harafa, Hamat, Orav, who can get Haribui? So we see that when the spies came, that they asked about what the land that was settled by others was like, and they asked about whether there were many people. Ha'am sheishba, v'chaka, chozer v'amer, ma'aretz ha'tova im ra'a, ma'ha'arim im b'machanayim u b'bivtzarim, The second thing they asked is it a good land? Do people have cities? Are they guarded? Which is parallel to the second thing. But when they said Hatovahi im Ra'a, Perisho im Tovahi bi Yishuv Ha'aretz Biganot u Pardesim, Shem Yishuv Ha'aretz. But the third thing is there fertility in the land, which would have reflected Hashem's presence. And very interestingly, if you look in museum pictures of Eretz Yisrael in the 20s, it was a desert until Jews came here. So when the Churban began, each of these three components, which are separate and defined, were destroyed one after the other. So the first thing was the Shechina departed, which led to the destruction, which led to the land no longer being supernaturally blessed. So Tormalka was the most populous area. Okay, and it says about Yanai that he had seven cities, and this was the glory of the king. Afterwards, it's Beitar, which was fortified and strong. Shea ba'aretz lekach nekra krach Beitar. Otamakom yushav shea nekra krach Beitar nechrav nechrash. And this place that was the strongest of all was destroyed and plowed over. So now we know several things. Let's just tie up what we have before we go further. We know that a person should be afraid of the three causes of these three forms of destruction, of the three aspects of our Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. We know that we should be afraid of sin, we should be afraid of lack of learning, because they create a certain inner lack within us that makes us unable to hold on to the three things for which the land is blessed. V'amar ki kol echad charav al yedei inyan harotwe. Each thing brought about destruction through, again, our deeds as is appropriate. Yerushalayim was destroyed through senseless hatred, as he explained previously. Okay, what is this? This is the Kamtza Bar Kamtza story. Okay, so how was the Kamtza Bar Kamtza story reflective of Sinas Chinam? So let's look at some aspects of the story. So the first of the very names, Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, means the one who grasps, the son of the one who grasps. The host, who has a friend called Kamtza, who he calls his beloved one, he was there also. Let's go with what went wrong at the feast. So Bar Kamtza comes. So notice it says it was destroyed not only for Bar Kamtza, but for Kamtza. What did he do wrong? All he did was not attend a feast that he ended up accidentally not invited to. But again, his name tells us who he was. It was this midah of kemitzut, of holding back, that destroyed Yerushalayim. So he comes to the feast. And who was he? A person who's in it for who? For himself. So the host surely should have given in to him. But why was he demanding this? So the Maharal argues that Bar Kamtza must have been someone who was a terrible person with a terrible reputation, who the host earnestly didn't want at his feast. And we see from what he did later, slandering the Jews and bringing about the destruction, he was no tzaddik. Not at all. Okay, then we have the silence of the Chachamim. Why were they silent? Again, because he was no tzaddik. What should they have done? They should realize, both the hosts, the Chachamim who were there, they should have realized that what he needs is to be drawn close, not to be distanced at this time, possibly. But what he did, his hatred against the Jews as a collective was surely in vain. The Jews as a collective surely didn't throw him out of the banquet. It was specific people and a specific incidents. So this is Sinas Chinam. So let's get a working definition of Sinas Chinam. We all know that love means closeness and empathy. any level of closeness and empathy is still called love. So there's greater love, lesser love. You don't love your neighbor the way you love your child. But there has to be at least some minimal level of empathy and closeness for the experience to be called love. Similarly, all distancing is called hate. All lack of attachment, all lack of relationship is called hatred. So when a person says, this person isn't my type, I can't relate to them, what they're really saying is I hate them. Now, it doesn't have to be huge, passionate hate. Just like love has many levels, so does hatred. What's sinat chinam? So it's when you're distancing a person, not in order to protect yourself, but because you're repulsed by them. So what are the laws? Let's go into the laws before we go back to the Maharal. It says in the Gemara that if somebody sins, so again, you hate them because they sin, you're repulsed by sin, which seems to be in place, then you could hate them and you could even tell your Rebbe to hate them. But what is this? That's if you try to give them proper rebuke and you were rebuffed. What's proper rebuke? That they're on your level. So if the person is making good decisions for their level, then you can't judge them or distance them. So the classical example would be two people. One is learning in Kollel, let's say Lakewood, and he's surrounded by people who are there because they want to make something of themselves spiritually. Those are the people who surround him all day long. And because of this, his speech is refined, his goals are refined. Compare him to somebody who's dealing in commodities as a day trader. He's surrounded by people who are takers. Everybody who he sees is a taker. Nobody has spiritual goals. And his speech may reflect it. So for person A to judge person B isn't right, because he has no idea of where that person is standing. So for that person to maintain integrity, even if their speech isn't refined, maybe as far as they can go in their choice box, as maintaining absolute sensitivity and speech would be for the other person's, let's say. So you find a person who's on your level, and you give them proper rebuke according to the halachas of rebuke, lovingly, etc., etc., and they still continue sinning. So I want you to know what the halacha is. You're allowed to hate them. The Gemara tells us this. But you simultaneously have to love them, meaning you're required both to hate and to love. You're meant to hate what's evil and limiting within them and be repulsed by it, and love them, the struggling person who's caught up in what they've become. So it means you can create distance, but at the same time there has to simultaneously be closeness, what we would call a hate-love relationship. So that would mean that you feel profound compassion for the person's hate and repulsion towards it, while at the same time you're keeping the three dinim of Avas Yisrael, which is speaking well of the person, giving kavod to the person, and being concerned with their physical well-being. So, how do you feel compassion when at the same moment you're repulsed? So an etzah that's given by the Baal HaTanya is everybody should remember their worst moments. We all have terrible moments that if other people would know about that moment, they would, not only do we think they would reject us, they would reject us. It would be a terrible humiliation if people knew about that moment. Keep those moments every so somewhere in the back of your psyche and revisit every so often. And in this moment of your own failure and degradation, say to yourself, was I conflicted? Yes. Did I fail? Yes. If there was a magic button I could press to get out of the conflict and to resolve it well, would I have pressed it? Yes. So imagine, let's say, you're angry at someone, maybe justifiably, maybe not, it doesn't matter. But you say things that are so devastating that you aim for the jugular, and when you just think about those words, you have no words for yourself at that moment. If you had a way of changing things so the person would hear you without your saying this, you would have pressed that button. So There is no magic button. So realize that the person whose evil you're despising, rightly, again, we're working on the assumption that you're right, also has no magic button, and they're takua, they're stuck. There's a rule, ein chovesh matir tatzmo mi beta asuvim. A prisoner can't free himself from prison. So the way a person gets out of prison is barachame shemayim, because Hashem will open up to the person if they ask for help. So this is where this person is, and this is how you should feel towards them. Okay, now he's going to explain why this had to lead to destruction. The Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim found the part within all of us that was like one person, the part that aspires and yearns, the part that wants the magic button. They had one Mizbeach. They weren't allowed to build private bamot, private altars, where I reach Hashem in my way, you reach Hashem in your way. When the Mikdash was around, they had one Mizbeach, meaning all people had to elevate their own lives collectively. So that's what made us one person, that we became aware of our own collective aspirations. And when there was divisiveness between them, meaning people could look at each other and not see that part, the part that's holy and good and yearns for connection, the place was destroyed, Shunasel Achdut Yisrael, that was created to unify Israel. And therefore, Kamtza's Sinas Chinam, and this means his mid of grasping, Necharav Ha'ir V'Hamikdash. Ukasheta Dekdek B'Lashon Kamtza, Ki Lashon Ze More Al Chiluk, Shekore Kamtza Al Shem HaChiluk V'Apivud. The word Kamtza doesn't just mean grasping, it also means dividing. It has two meanings. Ki Ze Lashon Kamitza. It's like when the Kohen took a kmitza, v'kamatz misham, he would take some of the whole. He didn't take the whole. He had to take just one fistful of the whole. So when you take for yourself, that means you're focused on what? On divisiveness. So a taker is always divisive. V'lashon chachamim, gabe achim shechalku, uba balcho v'taraf chalko shel echad mehem, v'mar sham, Mekamtzim, klamar shegoven ma'at mikol echad. So he gives us a halachic example from Gemara. You have several brothers who divided a field. Okay, then somebody who has money owed to him goes and divides one. And it says that what they should do is that everyone should give a little. L'fichach ha'nifrad v'nechalak me'akol nikra kamtza. So that which is divided and separated from the whole is called kamtza. Rotzel omar kometz me'akol, meaning they're grasped from the whole. V'lashon chachamim nikra ha'chagav kamtza. So a locust is called kamtza. Targum unkelus, v'nehi be'einenu k'chagavim k'kamtzanim. As we find that in the Meraglim story, it says we were like locusts in their eyes. We were like those who gather up, kamtzanim, each one for themselves. Now, the locusts are very numerous. That you know, you don't find one locust. They go in hordes. That's why they're called arba, because they're harbe, al shem haribui. V'ribui mikoach chiluk upirud, kedavar asher hu mitached, ein shayach bo ribui, ki lo yitrabe rak mechulak v'hanifrad. So it says that they're at the same time separate, meaning their collective powers with each individual locust gathering for who? For himself. They're not like the bees, for instance, where they gather for the whole. So this was the midah of kamtza, and this is the source of all sinas chinam. We'll get more into this next time. But I want to make it clear, why is this the source of sinas chinam? So the reason is because ahavas chinam, loving someone without there being a definable cause, comes from looking at them and seeing their inherent goodness and spirituality, that we have something in common with them. We all want the same. We all want Vekas and Hashem and goodness. If you ask anybody, even a person who's very distant, who do you like the best? And then you say, why do you like them? The answer is always spiritual. They're kind, they're sensitive, whatever. That's what we like the most, that's what we admire the most. We're all looking for Pnei Hashem. However, when a person relates to someone on a physical, material level, they're going to end up with Kamitza, and I'll tell you why. The physical world is really limited. It's really limited. So I'm sure you observed this when you were a young child, that if you have two waffles, okay, and you give one away, now you only have one. So the more materialistic people are and the less spiritual they are, the more inevitably they see everybody else as a competitor. And as soon as you see everybody else as a competitor, it's me against them. That means I am not them. That means we're separate. And we're in it each man for himself. And that's the source of chsinas chinam, where we distance from a person because we despise them, not just because we don't like what they've done, but also because we see them as a threat. A threat to what? A threat to something that we hold precious. Could be our ego, it could be something material. But either way, the source of it is always that we don't see the other person's spirituality. So let's just take this one more drop further and then we'll conclude for today. Okay, Perish ki amelach machet haklal,
so it says that there's no king of locusts, because a king would draw them all together by touching their collective vision.
So the reason why we're held accountable for our governments, which is a horrific thing to think about, is because they're our collective voice. So the locusts can't be governed because they're each one is going out for himself. So this is all the sod of the name Kamtsa. So the person, Kamtsa, the friend, this was his essence, this was his personhood. And the fact that our host, our unnamed host, was friends with him tells us where the whole beginning of the degradation started and tells us in turn where the Sinas Chinam also started. So you can't have two opposing forces in coexistence without relationship to each other. So the Achdus of Yerushalayim, where everybody saw that they have in common with everybody else on a spiritual basis, can't coexist with the Middah of Kamtsa. Now what we still have to talk about is how this affects the rest of the story, which we don't know what this has to do with about Rav Zecharia, how this affects the generation. So there are other things that we still have to find out, but in the meantime, we're beginning to understand what Sinas Chinam means and the sort of Avas Chinam and unity that we have to try to acquire to enter a situation of Geula, since Geula means bringing the Shechina back. That's what Geula is. We say, V'techazena inena b'shuvcha l'tzion barachamim, barachat Hashem ha-machazir shechinato l'tzion. This is in reference to Geula. Geula means being who we could be. So the first component of the three of being who we could be, of what Geula is the restoration of Shechina, which comes through Achdus, and the rejection of the Midah of Kamitza. So this is where we are now, and Mirza Shem